Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, Bluegrass, American Roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live. Good afternoon, you're listening to Sheffield Live. It's the film show with me, Denise.
And me, Martin.
Good afternoon. Yes.
Very good. This week was sort of like a milestone part of the year early on. The Oscar nominations have come through. Now, hopefully, we're not going to talk about these again until they actually get awarded.
Until it happens.
You're not here for the next 2 weeks, so I definitely won't be talking about them. Would you like to give us a brief canter through the lucky people who might be honoured.
Yes, we'll start off with Sinners, shall we? Sinners has done very well. Never, yeah. Would you believe it? But I do hope it's not going to be one of those...
Gets a load of nominations and wins the best...
And gets something
best
for...
Best casting.
I think it's a shoo-in for music. It's got to get something for the music because it's such a creative... force the music in that. But Wunmi Masako, the Nigerian-born Brit, who was up for supporting actress in that. That's really lovely news. Also, Sentimental Value, which we haven't reviewed on the show yet. I've watched it.
It slipped through that just after Christmas.
We had so many reviews last week that I didn't include it, but it is a wonderful film and it's done incredibly well. Mm. It's got like a suite of loads of the actors editing, directing, and even best film. So not just best international film, but best film. So I hope that sweeps a little bit something.
And I was very pleased that Train Dreams is in there. And I don't think it hasn't got an ice cream's chance in hell of winning. But it was nice that it got recognised.
Mm.
As I say, it was my favourite film of last year. And it was just nice to see that, someone else liked it.
Mm. I mean, I should mention Delroy Lindo as well. I think he's been based in America quite a while, but a lot's been made in the UK press, certainly. He's British-born.
He's done some great work in British theatre, TV and cinema, and I'd like to see him win that Supporting Actor award. Best Directing, Usual Suspects, really, isn't it? I think that... Best Actor... Well, I know who I would pick as best actor.
Who would you pick?
By far and away, there's only one name on there who deserves it, and that's Ethan Hawke.
Do you think? He's the only one.
He's had such an incredible year.
Mm.
He's been in... I know I always moan about actors being in too many films, but his aren't the ones that are being chucked at you all the time.
Mm.
And he's an actor with such incredible range. And I think every performance he's put in this year has been great. He always gives a good performance. But I think he's someone who's been working so hard for so long.
Mm.
And I once sat next to him on the Eurostar.
Here we go.
To Paris. Uma Thurman was... But that's by the by. but quite seriously, I think the rest of them, they'll be getting the award some other year probably. It'd be really nice just to recognise what a great, solid working actor he is.
Well, it's for Blue Moon, isn't it? But it's often like you'll get an actor that hasn't, the film isn't necessarily the one that will win. He's up against Leonardo DiCaprio in One Battle After Another, which I think you could say is more of an ensemble sort of piece. Do you reckon?
I think Leonardo DiCaprio got his Oscar. He was like Trump. I need to get this Oscar. I need the best acting Oscar. And he got it for The Revenant.
And now we're done with you.
And as I've always said, he's not a leading man. He's a character actor, Leonardo.
Yeah, and it is like an ensemble. I feel like One Battle After Another, although he is sort of the lead, it feels more like an ensemble. Yeah. Timothée Chalamet, Marty Supreme.
He'll be getting Oscars for the rest of the...
Yeah, leave it, Timothy. Michael B. Jordan in Sinners, two parts. And Lagomora.
He's got two nominations.
Maybe. Yeah. But The Secret Agent is the one that I haven't seen yet.
It hasn't come out yet, that's why.
And I saw the trailer for it because I caught No Other Choice yesterday.
This is by the director who did Baccarat a few years
ago. I absolutely adored that film.
Yeah.
So that could be one that is waiting for us.
We're on the Ethan Hawke team here on this side of the table. Okay. That's all I've got to say.
I as long as it's Ethan, Michael, or maybe Ragnar, I don't know. I'd be happy. But there's a lot of the best actress. So we've got Jessie Buckley.
What can we say actress when it's an award?
I think you can.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll say it this week.
Well, Rose Byrne's hotly tipped, isn't she? But I haven't seen, obviously, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. But she's hotly tipped for that. Kate Hudson, sort of. That's a weird one, isn't it?
Oh, it's for that Neil
Diamond. It's because she's playing a real person, I think. But
we didn't go and see that, did we? Neither of us could.
No, we couldn't. No, we didn't. There was too much other good stuff.
We've used that excuse for quite a few films, but that was the one that we could wheel that excuse out with genuine honesty.
Mm.
And so I couldn't be bothered.
I think it's a two-horse race for best actress, isn't it? Jessie Buckley and Rose Byrne. But it was nice to see Renate. I know I can't pronounce her Norwegian-Swedish name, but Reinsve. I'm going to go with that.
I think you went
Renate Reinsver in Sentimental Value. Emma Stone, I would be very surprised if that won for Begonia, I think.
Yeah, it was a bit of a... Look at me, I'm Emma Stone.
But there's some... I would surprise Jacob Elordi for Frankenstein in Best Supporting Actor.
Come on, give me a break.
I'd love to see Delroy Lindo win, but or even Benicio Del Toro.
That's the worst, the worst nomination in Best Supporting Actor.
Sean Penn, no.
He was like Wile E. Coyote in that, wasn't it? That was his performance.
But it is a nice, varied group. Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah.
Sean Penn's your sort of Hollywood, maybe. But Delroy Lindo, Jacob Elordi, Benicio Del Toro, that's quite a nice mix.
Yeah, but there's a couple. Well, there's certainly one there that shouldn't be on the list. But it should always be one. What are you doing?
It's... I like the... if Sinners doesn't win for Best Original Score, I'm gonna turn off. I'm gonna turn off and get on a plane and go to Hollywood.
Or even worse, you'll play the whole score again.
Look, it's so good.
You'll be waiting for me to have a weekend of, I've decided I'm gonna play Sinners all the way through.
Okay. Who's our pick for international feature? Because there's some really good, strong films in there. The only one I haven't seen Sirat and Secret Agent, but Sentimental Value, it was just an accident. Voice of Hindrajab, which we're going to review later.
Yeah, I mean there is one big film missing, isn't there? No Other Voice isn't on there. More of that later, as we
More
say.
Of that later, yeah.
I think that's about it. Otherwise, we get down to just narrating the list, don't we?
But my one surprise, even though I didn't see it, was that F1 got a nomination for Best Picture.
Yeah.
That's a bit odd to me.
And they have 10 now, and a choice of
10. Yeah, yeah.
It used to be 5, didn't it, like everything else. And did they? Have they always had a best casting?
No, that's the new one.
Is it?
That's the new one, yeah.
How pointless is what I'd say.
Well, I don't agree.
Well, good. You shouldn't be sitting here just agreeing with each other. It makes for dead radio.
I don't agree, because I think it's quite a skill, casting a film. And look how many films we go... We go, no, it's ruined because that bloke was in it. We do that, don't we?
You might.
Michael Douglas, no.
I'm a perfectly open mind on things. You know me. I just let things wash over
if
me.
If we had a phone line, it would be going mad now.
The switchboard's lighting up. That's always my favourite. And when I say it, I always look up as if there's actually a switchboard.
He does, listener. It's true. It's true. So Oscars, I'm gonna mark. I'm glad there's some quite a nice bit of international flavour in there, and I hope nothing gets everything. I hope it's a nice mix.
I'm sorry, 16 nominations. That's just a lack of imagination. It's ridiculous, and they do it every year, but. As I say, there is something of a curse to it as well, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
As we've already said. So, is that it? That's it for now.
That's enough.
Should we let you go?
What we'll do now is we will not mention the Oscars much again until it happens in March.
We've got the next few weeks sorted out. Anyway, yeah. We've got a really great Valentine's Day special we'll be doing.
More on that later.
Get your big box of chocolates and a bottle of baby sham. Sob your way through some terrible film. I think you've got emotions.
Trailer trash, though.
Chuck something in.
Oh.
I managed to watch half of Satan Tango this week, the 7-hour Baylor Tarr movie.
Right.
And I've got the other half to do, and I'm going to do it because I got quite hypnotised by it. It takes some time for it to sink in. But
did you have to close the curtains and turn all the lights off? And
funnily enough, this week was the perfect weather for watching Satan Tango. It was cold,
miserable cold and wet. Yeah,
out there. And I almost saw
that's an endorsement, isn't it?
It feels like I haven't got any running water or electricity or anything. I need to go for a long walk down a street that's full of litter with the wind blowing it around me. And I did. So I'm just saying, I'm halfway through and I'm going to finish it. And it is quite, it's something different, but it's, as I say, it really does draw you in. I spent an hour watching an old man stumble around a ratty little room and then went out for a walk and died. It was amazing. I was transfixed by it. There weren't any car chases.
Well, I had a bit of a French-Belgian theme this week.
Oh, come on in.
So I caught up with the Balkanettes. Do you remember it was at Cannes, and it was the actress from Portrait from a Lady on Fire, her directing debut. The three women go across the road to have a party with a photographer, and chaos ensues. But it's the three women on the balcony.
I missed this one completely.
It was streaming on BFI, and I thought, I'm going to catch up with it. I don't think it got much of a cinema release.
Yeah.
Very odd tone of black humour, feminism and misogyny, yeah.
Women don't do humour.
We don't. It's famously, we're not funny. And that led me...
I'm just chucking a bit of red meat there. And
it snapped it. Did I buy... No.
No.
No. But then it's that...
blood over the machine.
But that led me to a film that I hadn't seen before, Chantal Akerman's Golden 80s. Have you seen that film?
Which one's that?
So it's the one where they're in like a weird mall. It all takes place and there's a cafeteria and a beauty salon full of loads of people working in it. Bright coloured, vibrant costumes and a sort of a department store across the way. And it all takes place underneath here.
Oh, I have to check this one out.
Well, I don't know if you would like it, if I'm honest.
Man.
No, just because it's... It's not what you expect from Chantal Akerman. It's all bright and bubbly and frothy, or it looks it, and then it's not really under the surface.
Yeah.
But that Golden 80s, that was the 1980s, I think it was 85, 86.
Oh, was that on the BFI?
Yeah, right. Streaming on BFI, yeah.
Okay.
It's billed as a musical comedy film. It's got like a chorus of four men who just seem to be hanging around singing in the...
That's what we do.
But yeah, so I had a bit of a divert.
Sounds fascinating. I mean, but she has such a varied body of work as well. And they're not just 3.5 hour films of a woman.
Not only, but also.
Yeah. Have you seen any of her documentaries? They are so
well. They're all streaming on BFI at the moment. So I'm going to catch them next week.
So Hotel Monterey is just these static shots in this sort of grimy hotel. In the States, and I can't remember where exactly it was, and there's no sound. So, I mean, it really is a difficult watch because, you know, silent movies always had sound, even if it was just a piano player, you know. And it's just no sound whatsoever. And I must say, that was one of the most difficult films I've found to actually sit through to, you know, even Bela Tal, it's the sound of the wind and the rain, you know.
Well,
but you should always try it.
Yes.
Work.
Yes.
No.
What's our trailer trash?
Oh, trailer trash. All right. I saw this one, might have been this week, a film called Cold Storage. It's quite a sort of tacky mock comedy horror movie.
It's in a sort of Zombieland kind of Contagion meets Zombieland, I'm getting from it.
Teenagers or. But they work in it. They're doing a shift in a place that's got atomic waste in the basement, and it looks like they open up a big sealed barrel of atomic gunk, and anyone who comes into contact with it changes, let's say, to something quite nasty. And it seems to have, well, Liam Neeson is in it, who is sort of playing, I think, his character from Taken before he retired.
But he also looks like he might be a president or something.
if only. And then I'm watching it, and I just got this glimpse of someone. I thought, no, that can't be. And I've watched it again since, and it is. And it's Leslie Manville with a really big gun.
Yes.
Now, she's got form on this, if you remember. A couple of years ago, I was saying how great she was as a crime matriarch in this Kevin Costner film called Let Him Go, where she had a massive gun, a huge big blonde rinse.
Oh, Leslie
was evil.
Leslie Manville's massive gun.
If you've never seen this, you've got to watch it, because she's, I mean, she goes for it. And then there was another name on the poster. I thought, and I looked closely again.
I didn't see this person in the trailer, and I watched it twice, and then you pointed out who it was.
Because there's an older woman with a massive gun. That's Vanessa Redgrave.
Yeah, she pops up and she's like, I've got to get out of here.
Yeah, what?
I never spotted that was her.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, whether or not I'll go to see it or not, I'll have to see it what my patience levels are.
It might be a fun popcorn one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as it's about an hour and a half.
Don't push me more than 90 minutes.
That's it. I'm reaching that. I'm trying to reach that level now.
I am finding that a lot of our reviews would be like, oh, just... It's about 15 minutes too much, isn't it?
I think we've got a couple today.
Well, our other trailer trash is... I think it's got two titles. Heel is what I've seen the title as, but it's also known as Good Boy or The Good Boy. I don't know if that's maybe the American title for it. But it's a Polish director, Jan Komosa. I like that name. But
I think that was a Swedish pronunciation of a Polish.
Yeah, I've got a lot of nationalities going on. I've got a composer to get the pronunciation right later as well on the music bits.
Good luck.
But this one features Stephen Graham, who was thoroughly good, a good man in Adolescence, playing a thoroughly bad man in this film, with Andrea Riseborough, who I absolutely adore. The premise seems to be that they've kidnapped a 19-year-old bad boy and they want to make him a good boy. But it looks odd. It's like a lot
it's
in a basement.
Like a riposte to Adolescence.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see, this brain's always working. It's always... I know you sneer at me for a lot of these shows, but you know...
I don't sneer. I've just got a resting face. It looks like a psychological thriller. It doesn't all take place in the basement, but I'm kind of liking the tense look of this, and I like the idea of a Polish director. It's set in England.
Well, it's always that thing of, you know, directors from other countries making films in countries they're not from.
It's a nice little subgenre.
They see things in a different way.
So, yeah, that's our trailer trash.
That's it.
That's it. We're not trailer trashing anything else, but
we are gonna bring to a close Denise's 28 days, hours,
weeks,
minutes,
months,
weeks, years, decades later fixation
with a binge of so the new 28 years later film Bone Temple that we reviewed last week, and actually we really really liked it. It had a nicer ending for you than the 28 years later film. You weren't pleased with that.
The only thing I'd say about it, and it's something I was thinking about during the week, it's strange. It's a strange film because technically...
It's like a middle.
It doesn't have a beginning and it doesn't have an ending. And that's all I'm going to say
about it. Yeah.
It's a strange... You can't imagine 10 years, in 10 years I'm saying, oh, let's put on...
That one,
Temple.
Yeah.
We'll just watch that.
Well, I don't know, because of some of the... We'll talk about some of the other scenes in it in a bit with the music.
No,
but
we're not talking about it. I'll kill your mic.
I'm at the desk. Yeah. He can't do that.
I can reach over.
I've been listening to a lot of Duran Duran this week because I didn't like them at the time. But Dr. Kelson, Ralph Fiennes character, has on his missions to get all the drugs in a 70-mile radius, he's also managed to forage a wind-up record player and whatever vinyl he could find, and one of them is this.
Turning as the lights flashing out of sight.
That was on film. Yes. Duran Duran.
Yes.
Itself named after a character in a film. The band.
Oh, yes, from Barbarella.
Yeah.
Right, you're obviously listening to the film show, would you believe it, on Sheffield Live and 93.2 FM on digital, and you can listen later if you get onto our website. And in fact, you can listen to quite a few shows. See, there's a lot of continuity and banter between the two of us. And deep down, we actually like each other.
We do. It's true.
We haven't got like a feature thing this year. We had this week. We've got a few reviews.
We're sort of catching up, aren't we, on some reviews?
And we've had to sort of scurry through a few reviews recently. So we're giving ourselves a bit of time, and hopefully we can play our last music track nearly all the way through.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it?
So I'm going to kick off with a feature film which has just come out on Netflix. It's one of Netflix's straight out to streaming movies, and it's The Rip, directed by Joe Carnahan and starring Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, who every few years get together for a film. I don't know why, because I've never seen Good Will Hunting, so I've never sort of got into this Matt and Ben sort of thing.
And
it's always been a bit of a mystery to me, because I mean, I must say I do like Matt Damon.
But you're saying his name wrong. It's Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. Again, your entire film takes the mickey out of him. Whereas Ben Affleck, I was, I've seen more emotional pieces of wood than you. You know,
they have an enduring partnership though, and friendship that is refreshing, I suppose.
We'll see. Anyway, The Rip is a sort of a throwback to the sort of police thriller they might have made 20 years ago, and certainly when Carnahan was making these sort of films 20 years ago. 20 years ago, he made a great police procedural called Narc with Ray Liotta and Jason Patrick. And there were big things expected of Carnahan. And he sort of just slipped into this, crime thriller sort of thing, lots of sweary, violent people running around beating up. He's been a disappointment for me, certainly. He's been a disappointment as a director. And this film, for me, follows very much on in that line. It's a film about two cops who lead a narcotics team who come upon a huge stash of cartel money, $20 million. They're under sort of investigation because their previous team leader has been assassinated recently, and the FBI is looking into them, thinking that one or a number of members of this team are on the take. And most of the film takes place inside this house in this deserted cul-de-sac, it seems, where they find all this money, and then it becomes a game of wits as the people sound each other out to try and see if one of them... if one of them is actually one of the bad guys. It's got a really good cast. Apart from Damon and Affleck, there's Stephen Yuen. There's Teyana Taylor is in there. The quite often amazing Catalina Sandino Moreno, who I think is terrific. And there's Kyle Chandler, who always delivers a good job. But I don't know, this was a film for me that thought it was far cleverer than what it actually was.
I mean, the trailer looked exhausting.
It was. Mm. And could I just say, it could have had at least 20 minutes cut out of it. We're in 2.25-hour country here now. Now, I know you say, but the credits take 10 minutes. I know, but if you're like us, we're the sort of people who sit there and watch the credits to the end.
Mm.
And I've got to stay there for that. But quite simply, there's all this sort of, I think it's very clever plotting. And then it explodes into 15, 20 minutes of ridiculous action. Cars driving around Miami at high speed, with people with machine guns just blazing away at each other. Oh, I thought, oh, just stop it, please, please, let them run out of petrol or something, anything. And then there's like a 10-minute sort of epilogue where they all stand around congratulating themselves, and you find out what happens to everybody who's been in the film. And I can honestly say that by this time, I didn't give a toss what happened to any of them. Now, you may well like it, and yeah, but it's like, it's weird because it feels like the sort of film that Hollywood used to make. And I don't think they make them anymore much. And I think it's had like a huge, nearly $100 million budget. Again, like Netflix are pouring money into this stuff. And of course, it don't matter because they don't have to get any sort of theatrical take from this. What they're looking for is for people to subscribe. And be, oh, the only way I can see that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon film is to subscribe to Netflix. And they do. And that's how lots of these platforms are making their money, to have these films. They're almost like loss leaders. All people will know is a Matt Damon, Ben Affleck thriller. And the trailer, as you say, full of action.
Mm.
If you want to spend 2.25 hours without having to think too much, by all means do so. I've seen it. I've taken the bullet for the team this week. I'm leaving it there.
Okay. The Voice of Hind Rajab.
Mm.
So this was, I think it was the Venice Festival. This absolutely wowed the festival, didn't it? It's a drama documentary. The Tunisian director, Kauter Ben Hania. And it is based on a true event, obviously. Young girl, Hind Rajab, is one of seven victims in a car shot up by Israeli forces in Gaza in 2024.
It's almost 2 years to the day that this event happens.
She survives the initial attack, though, and is on the phone. So the film starts with her phone call to Red Crescent volunteers who want to arrange an emergency response to get to her, but they have to go through a lot of red tape to be able to get an ambulance to her, which is only 8 miles away. It's an hour and a half. It's very tense, even though we know as an audience that this is based on a real young girl. She was 5 or 6 years old. So we know that she's not going to survive this. The Red Crescent volunteers, it's all based there in their call centre. They are actors playing real people. And there is a moment in the film where they're filming on a mobile phone their response and talking to the girl and all of the team around. And you see the real people on the phone.
It's an extraordinary moment.
Yeah,
it? Yeah.
But it's the real voice. So there's the real voice of the child. And I don't know. What I found really interesting about it is at certain points I felt, is this exploitative? Is this okay? And then I'm thinking, I'm feeling that because I'm concerned that an audience, why do we need to hear one voice from one victim when there's so many of these victims? Why do we need to respond? I don't mean why is the film there. I mean, why do we as a society only respond when we hear a real voice of a real child when it's documented happening, going on? I found it really, like, my brain was just working overtime and I didn't feel, it didn't exploit the emotion of it, if you know what I mean. You've got the responses and they're just desperate to help her and they're tied. They can't do anything, really. And just the tragedy of it. It did a really good job for me of balancing, telling the story without getting hysterical and Hollywood about it. Mm. It felt genuine. And then I think it sucks you at the end,
yeah.
You know.
I was dreading watching this.
Yeah.
Absolutely dreading. I thought, I'm just going to be in pieces as soon as this starts. And again, some people won't like this, but it's the recording of Hinda Rajah being in the car. And with that, they build this dramatic, acted out framework with the people, the Red Crescent responders. And so within that, there is a lot of manipulation. For one thing, the first message that comes through is the first message, and the last message is the last message. And in between that, you can't 100% be sure that we're hearing this in the chronological order, or if the bits that we're hearing is what is then driving the drama that we're watching. And there are four protagonists who we follow, and they're sort of quite clearly defined, and there are the tensions between them is again which increases the dramatic parts of it. There is one character, Omar, who is very, very hot headed, and he said, "We're only 8 minutes away. We need to do this. We need to do this now." There's Mahdi, who is the coordinator of the team, who is trying to say, "No, we can't go in. We haven't got clearance."
But just the incredible pressure. You get the incredible pressure on all of them, don't you?
Yeah. And then it's Rana was an incredible character.
She's his supervisor,
isn't she? Yeah. And she is in a white hijab. Now, I think that's because she's in mourning. Because that's a colour that some Muslims wear. And it's a very, very sort of tricky scene where Hind is talking to Nana and saying, "Can you get your husband to come and get me?"
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Nana says, "I can't. He's too far away. I can't get to him." And I think it's because her husband has recently died in the actions that have been taking place. I may be wrong, but that's what I got from it. And I was equally upset about that. And maybe you can understand Omar's anger. Is that we're only sort of like 3 months into this. So the full horror has not yet been unleashed. There's some... If you can think back to it, there was some hope that, well, this will end in next week.
Yeah, but there's also signs around the call centre of... So there's the reason that the supervisor is quite so reluctant to... Because he's lost so many good people.
All the ambulance drivers. Because
we didn't mention at the top of the review that the two paramedics die well, that eventually... It's so bitter.
Right? And I think, well, you know what? It doesn't matter because this is a polemic.
Mm.
This is a film with a message. The events that you see actually happened. There may be some dramatic narrative add-ons to it. But, you know, that's what happened. And if you... don't like it and you want to try and excuse it by saying, well, that's not really what happened, because they may say, I'm sorry, I've got nothing to say to you. I think it's a really, really powerful film.
Mm.
And I would imagine it's going to win the Academy Award.
Yeah.
I think it should do. Whether there might be films that are better, this is a film that people need. I don't know if people... It needs to have the acknowledgement of it being an important film.
Yeah.
I know that may sound really, really pretentious, isn't it? But, yeah, and I kept going until the end, and then I lost it at the end.
Yeah, but I, like you, with certain films, I dread the impact of watching them. And actually, the way that it's filmed and the way that you're involved, I don't mean that you forget, but you can engage with it, and it's not constantly upsetting.
To watch it than what I was expecting. Yeah. But then it's a punch to the stomach in the end, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
that's an overwhelming rate for the voice of Hind Rajah from us.
Incredibly so.
Okay. it's a difficult transition now, but I'm going back to the Zombies. But I couldn't do 28 Years Later without a reference to some of the original soundtrack. But this is John Parish's reworking of the theme from 28 Days Later, used in 28 Weeks Later, and it's Leaving England.
Feedback going on there,
yeah.
Crazy.
That is Leaving England, which is the closing track from 28 Weeks Later, which is often overlooked. Next review. Rental
on.
Family is still out. Director Hikari features Brendan Fraser, Takiro Hira, and Mari Yamamoto.
You're like a linguist.
Today, I've got it going on. You wait. Brendan Fraser, I can take or leave Brendan Fraser, if I'm honest, but he plays an American actor who's been living in Japan for 7 years. So he speaks good Japanese, but he is obviously a bit of a fish out of water. He has a middling acting career, getting odd jobs, not really doing very well, living in a small apartment. Which there's actually a funny moment when he looks out over all his neighbours and is jealous of all of their community and lives. Looks a bit like a Rear Window odd bit. Mm. He gets a job from his agent, which is turn up at a funeral. He doesn't know it's going to be a funeral. He doesn't have any idea. And he gets in and there seems to be a reenactment. He doesn't quite know what's going on. And then he realises that the guy in the coffin is not dead. He has gone to an agency. They have arranged for actors to come and mourn him so that he can feel better about his life. So this starts his relationship with this agency being a rental family. So he gets the odd gig working here and there. One of them is with a young girl where he plays like a long-lost father because her mother wants to get her into a posh school that would frown on single mother. He meets up with an old actor a retired actor who is a hero of his, and he has to pretend to be a journalist interviewing him to make him feel better. But obviously he can't, he doesn't quite understand, and he over-eggs his part, if you like. Mm. But also it's about him making this contact with people and actually understanding people. And it's quite a slight film, but it's quite a pleasant watch. It's an hour and 50 minutes. It's not a major work of art or anything like that, but I did find it quite enjoyable, if a little predictable. Nicely, gently shot. There were a few moments in it where I'm like, there's a moment where the mother of the girl is annoyed and worried that her daughter's got his number, but she's let her daughter go out for play dates with him. So I don't really understand what the issue is there with that. It's quite nice. Like I say, I can take or leave Brendan Fraser, but I quite liked him in this. Mm. He gets the balance quite right. And I think it's a better film than it is because the acting's quite good in it, I think. Yeah. So I can give you a recommendation, a gentle recommendation for Rental Family. How's that?
Okay, well, thanks, but no thanks. That's just me talking. Right, this week's big film, though, is the new film from South Korean director Park Chan-wook, No Other Choice. Now, Park, over the past 25 years, has produced maybe 10 or 11 of the most startling movies that have graced international screens, way back from Joint Security Area in 2000 through his Revenge trilogy, which included Old Boy, which is 3-minute fight sequence in a corridor.
That hallway, yeah.
It's been copied so many times, so bad. It even had a terrible Spike Lee remake, Old Boy, which keep well away. He's made a film in Hollywood, Stoker. He's done a BBC television series, The Little Drummer Girl, The Handmaiden. All of his films have been brilliantly made. He's an incredible stylist. He pulls narrative turnarounds on you. And so this, his new film, by the sound of it, sounds as though it's going to be relatively pedestrian. A manager in a paper mill is laid off after the company is taken over by Americans, and he has difficulty finding a new job. And he comes up with this great idea of finding who else might be competing for these jobs that he's not getting. And once he gets that information, he decides he's going to knock them off.
It's very dog eat dog, literally,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. And from there we proceed through a series of tonal shifts, which sometimes I found a bit hard. It can be like quite dark in places, and it goes into absolute like farcical slapstick with some of the murder sequences, but just all of it is so brilliantly done.
But it looks
2 hours and 20 minutes again. So I just felt overwhelmed with it by the end. And I thought, if you could just cut maybe, it's going to be my, I'm going to tease you with it. Just take 20 minutes.
Oh, not 15, 20.
15. But I feel bad saying anything negative about it because it's stunning, absolutely stunning. That,
there's one shot in particular I'm thinking of where there's two cars on a cliff on a, you know when he's, oh, I don't want to spoil it for what's happening narratively, but the second
thing,
yeah, where there's the scene of the two cars on the right of the screen. You've got the cliff face and then the sea. And it just looks such a great shot. There's so many great shots in it.
Yeah, he has an eye, let's say. Mm. He can see things in a way that are just, it sort of blows your mind. Mm. Wow, I would never have thought of shooting it like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there about halfway through, and I think this story feels a bit familiar to me. And at the end, it says it's based on a novel by Donald Westlake.
Have you read it?
I'd read it about 20 years
ago.
Oh,
my goodness.
Book. And I'd, the basics of it, I'd, you know, it hadn't sort of clicked while it was on. And it was a book called The Axe. And that was made into a film by the great director Costa Gavras.
So you've read it and you've seen it.
I hadn't seen his version, but I think I might try and track it down. And again, the book and Costa Gavras's film are set with paid the mill managers who get made redundant and come and then set off on these.
And it's got this sort of central message about consumerism and.
Yeah. And there are some. It's funny as well. You know, like the worst thing that his kids have when he's made redundant is they have to give up Netflix.
What? Yeah. I love that bit when there's the sound cue of Netflix. And I have to say, when I saw it in the light last night, it was absolutely packed.
Yes. And you were right for that preview.
Yeah.
I barely got a seat.
There was some, there was lots of laughs as well as like, ooh, proper moments.
And it didn't get an Academy Award nomination. Mm. None of his films have. It's weird
But we're rating it, but
I'm giving it a big rate. Go to the loo before you go in. Don't have any pop. You don't need any popcorn either. And enjoy it. But as I say, there are just a few moments. I'm going
right. Are you ready? Are you ready for my next pronunciation?
Please.
Okay. Hildagufnadottir.
Oh, was that Icelandic?
Yes. The composer for the new 28 Years Later Bone Temple film. Now, there's lots of her usual schlicky-tocky Joker-style tension, but there's a beautiful little moment in it between Dr. Kelson again. Oh, it's just my Dr. Kelson obsession in this, isn't it? And this is Moon. Right, that was a lovely piece of Moon from Hildagufnadottir.
Yeah, lovely. And that's it for this year.
I mean, I know the film's an 18, but I'm thinking of starting
about
a kids.
28 years later.
I'm thinking of bringing out a kids book, Alpha Man and the Moon.
Right, I've got some other stuff to get through here.
New releases
next week. Yeah, Shelter with Jason Statham.
Don't even Shelter.
See it, Primate. Monkey goes mad and kills people. Watch it.
Nouvelle Vague.
Nouvelle Vague.
C'est français. Cool. Non, yeah. Mais.
Mm. And there's some horror
Rabbit
film.
Trap.
Rabbit Trap, you know. I can't be bothered telling you about it. It's like, you've got the internet. Go and find out about this stuff. You know, what are you, helpless? Anyway.
Right.
Just me next week, so you're going to love that.
I'm leaving him for 2 weeks.
No idea what I'm going to get up to.
I've got a bit of an idea. Right, we're going to leave you with the dance spectacular moment from 28 Years Later, Bone Temple, Mr. Ralph Fiennes, doing it to the Number of the Beast and Iron Maiden.
Doing it for the kids.
The devil sends the beast with wrath, because he knows the time is short. Let him who hath understanding reckon the number of the beast, for it is a human number. Its number is 666.
I left alone. My mind was blank. Get the memories from my mind. What did I see? Could I believe that what I saw that night was real and not just fantasy? Just what I saw.